Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the fourth day of November 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. The agricultural energies with Harry Cooney of GrowMark out of Bloomington, Illinois. The weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Have an update of the state statistician's view of harvest across the Midwest, especially Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and Minnesota. And I'll update you on the goings-on in Washington, D.C., where U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack appears set to put forth a brand new beef checkoff. There's already a beef checkoff. We'll hear more about it as we make our way through the closing market report on this Tuesday afternoon from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Tuesday afternoon. December corn today down 9 cents at $3.64 and a half for the afternoon. The March at $3.77 and a quarter, 8 3/4 lower in May, down 8 3/4 at $3.86. July 3.92 3/4, 8 1/4 lower. September futures down 8 cents, and December of next year down 7 1/4 at the settlement price there at $4.07 3/4 of a cent. Soy complex bean futures down 18 3/4 on the afternoon, $10.10. The settlement price, January, $10.09 3/4 of a cent, down 20. March at 10.14 1/2, down 19 1/4. And the May futures at 10.19 1/2, down 19 1/2 cents. July futures, 10.24, down 19. And next year's November soybeans at $9.98 1/4, 16 cents lower. Soybean meal on the afternoon at $3.72.50, down 20 for the day. And the bean oil at $33.07, down 96 cents. A soft red winter wheat in the July contract at $5.54 3/4, down 8 1/2 cents. The hard red in the July at $5.91 1/4, down 8 cents for the afternoon. Livestock finished the live cattle futures at $166.55, down 50 cents. That in a nearby December, February down a dime at $167.17 1/2. Feeder cattle finished up in the November $1.25 higher at $236.82 1/2 for the afternoon. And the lean hogs in the nearby contract, that's December, at $88.10, down 75 cents. This is Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. The nearby contract for the crude oil is currently trading at $77.62, rather 16 cents a barrel, down $1.62 for the day. Diesel fuel at $2.43 9/10 is a nickel lower on the afternoon. And the gasoline in the RBOB at $2.07 4/10 is 4 3/10 of a cent lower. Natural gas at $4.13 3/10, up 8 7/10. And ethanol futures at $1.86 2/10, finished 7 1/10 of a cent higher in the November. December futures were down 6 1/10 at $1.75 1/2. The weather forecast says we'll see some isolated showers through the afternoon in the Urbana-Champaign area today. Cloudy, a high of 52 degrees. West winds at 9 to 13. They'll gust all the way to 17. Chance of rainfall through the afternoon set at 20%. Partly cloudy tonight with a low of 39 degrees on a west-southwest wind at 5 to 8. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. The high of 60 degrees. Tomorrow night, a 30% chance of rainfall. That after midnight in the central time zone, increasing cloudiness. A low of 42 tomorrow night on a south wind at 9 to 11. And then Thursday, a 40% chance of showers. Cloudy with a high of 46. It'll be breezy with a west-northwest wind by then at 13 to 18. That'll increase to 19 to 24 by the time we make it through the afternoon. Winds will gust as high as 31 on Thursday. Thursday evening, mostly cloudy and 31. Friday, mostly sunny and 46. Friday night, cloudy and 34. And Saturday, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy and 46 degrees. Saturday night, mostly cloudy and 29. And on Sunday, sunny skies, a high of 42 degrees. Sunday night, 30 degrees for the low. And Monday, to start the work week, partly sunny and a high of 48 degrees. We'll have a more complete look with the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. Don Day's out of the office, but Drew Lerner left us an update of what will be happening.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
This is the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line is Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, to give us some guidance as to what's been happening in the fundamentals of the marketplace and how trade moved in Chicago for the day. What'd you think of the corn and the bean pits?
Well, you know, we come in today, we after we ended the month, and seemed to somewhat end the squeeze on the bean meal. You know, we were lower yesterday, and we followed through overnight and continued on today with that. The bean meal did have a wild ride today, closing narrowly lower, but, you know, when it was down hard, why, our beans were down hard. And I think that that's looking at the last part of the crop to come in, hardly any place to store it, and that one's coming to market, and the processors feeling a little more easy getting another 3-4 days of crush on hand.
So once, how did this all take place? So is it partially that bean meal went off the board, or the lead option month from October is gone, that trains are freeing up? What happened to make bean meal such a hot commodity?
Well, I think first off, our pipeline was very empty.
Mm-hmm.
The Southeast growers went as low as they could on stocking up on the very expensive. Remember when we had the $3 premiums on beans for the last to catch up on the crush and keep it going? And meal was very expensive for that point in time. And they thought they would fill in easier after that. Basically, along the way, the weather held us weak. We didn't have lots of beans to crush. But the rail cars just are not moving like they should, and they have in the past. And it left them sort of short of meal in the meantime. And they had to pick up with the truck meal, so they were turning around and buying truck meal. They'd already bought meal for that time period, but they didn't want to cancel that. So basically, we double-booked meal for a while, along with a very, very aggressive bean meal export program that was put on out of the Gulf. So that, along with loading beans to China out of every port except Toledo last week and going over 100 million loadouts in 1 week to China, you know, kept this bean market pretty spiffy.
All right, it kept it spiffy, but as you look forward, is there any reason to believe that the problems from the past, minus the fact that we now have the crop in and we have the beans around, will keep the price of soybeans supported going into the future?
Well, I think, you know, it's not going to totally fall apart because we've got a very, very aggressive bean meal and bean export program out of the Gulf for the next 2-3 months. And so farmers are going to have to be coaxed to let a few beans go between now and then. But I think as we get the situation straightened out, and I'm saying straightened out, I'm getting the pipeline filled back in over the next 2 weeks. As we get that done, and I think that our buyers in the Southeast may be bringing in a boatload of bean meal from South America, or they are going to keep a closer watch and knowing that they have to switch to truck goods after that. So that's going to be one of the things I think will settle us down a little bit. We've got enough beans in this country that we can afford to get bean meal to everybody that needs it for feed here and our export business, as long as we can keep it moving to the right place.
And on that supply note, enough beans in this country, what, 450 million bushels in ending stocks, according to USDA in October. Of course, they'll update that on the 10th of this month when the WASDE numbers come out, with a $10 mark in front of the November of this year, nearly $10 for next year. Are there things producers need to be thinking about in marketing terms for soybeans?
Well, you know, we've been very aggressive in looking at $10 puts in the next November, trying to sort of secure that in there. We're sort of feeling that when we get straightened around here, that this is not a bad price to have done some pricing on this last run-up of some unpriced beans from this year's harvest. So, you know, we've been more aggressive marketers than market holders, I guess.
There are some new numbers out from, what, FC Stone and, a couple of other places, but it looks to me as if they, when they look forward to ending stocks and the size of this year's crop, just refigured acreage and dropped back their total production. But not by a lot, and it's still above what USDA has put in the can to this point.
that's what we looked at there. At first said, oh, there was a cutback, but it's still above what the USDA has. Informa generally tries to report what they figure the government will say, F.C. Stone and the Lynn Group, and that tries to say what they think the ending numbers will be. So, you know, Informa did the corn yield. They lowered it to 174.4, and their soybeans, they raised it to 47.9. So, you know, a little bit of a cutback in that corn number that a lot of people weren't expecting.
On the Lynn Group, by the way, Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group will be our extra panelist this week on Commodity Week. We'll record that Thursday afternoon. Should be up on the website at willag.org on Thursday evening, and then it'll air on the Commodity Week slot. That comes up after the closing market report on Fridays. Turn your attention to the livestock very quickly for me. There are still some really high numbers for feeder cattle and for live cattle. They have bunched up against $170 a couple of times. Will they stay there?
That is a big question. I think that we probably will for right now. I mean, the meat demand has stayed strong, and if we can see prices dropping at the gas pump, people like to eat steak, they like to eat beef, they like to have their hamburger. And if they can have a little extra money that they don't have to put in their gas tank, I think we'll continue to see the beef prices stay strong. And if the corn prices drop, if the meal prices drop, feeder cattle are going to be in demand. And there's areas in the Dakotas and that area where, you know, they just can't get their corn moved out, so it's better to turn it into beef.
Dwayne Nelson, of course, is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, joins us on this Tuesday afternoon. Wayne, thanks for being with us for the day.
Thank you, Todd.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, and there you can buy your tickets or at this number, 800-898-1065. For the Farm Assets Conference, that's at the end of the month, Monday, the 24th day of November. That's just prior to Thanksgiving. The doors open at 10:15 a.m. in the morning. We'll run to 5 p.m. in the evening. Our panelists for the day will include Greg Johnson, Matt Bennett, Aaron Curtis, Bill Mayer, Pete Manhart, Bill Gentry, Ellen Dearden, Wayne Nelson, Kurt Kimmel, Jackie Vakes, Dan Zwicker, Mike Zuzulo, too. All regular names you hear on our air here each and every week on Will Ag Programming. And we'll have Gary Schnitke, Bruce Sherrick, and Jonathan Compass there from the University of Illinois. Should be a fantastic day. It's our first annual Farm Assets Conference. You can buy your tickets right now for just $25 at 800-898-1065 or online at willag.org. Again, the number to call, 800-898-1065. The $25 fee gets you the whole event from 10:15 till 5 o'clock on the 24th day of November, the meal, and the parking at the Marriott Hotel in Normal, Illinois. Now, up next, a little something from the United States Department of Agriculture. It appears Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack is going to move ahead with plans to create a second beef checkoff. USDA is expected to file a notice in the Federal Register early this month seeking public comment on the proposal. Cattle and Beef Board Operating Committee member Linda Gilbert of South Dakota says she has many questions about the second program and its possible effects.
There's a lot of questions that we all have on how that will work in conjunction with the current checkoff and what the Cattlemen's Beef Board, of which I'm a member, what our role will be and what we need to be aware of. And so at this time, I actually have more questions. I don't have any answers.
Gilbert says she's not worried about a second program being put out because producers will eventually decide on which checkoff prevails.
I'm not as concerned because I do believe that at the end of the day, it will be about what the producers want, and that's who we need to be listening to. And They have indicated that they want to see some changes, and possibly this is the best route. We just don't know yet.
Gilbert is hoping producers will weigh in with their comments and help give the Ag Secretary direction on where to go.
I would encourage people to definitely contact or be a part of the comment period, because that is where he's going to find what the interest of the producers and the beef industry are. It seems like the industry groups have had a hard time coming together, which that's not surprising to me. We have a lot of different parts of our chain.
The parallel checkoff program the Ag Secretary is planning would likely be funded by an additional $1 per head fee that producers would pay, while continuing to pay $1 per head to fund the current checkoff program. On the subject of the United States Department of Agriculture, just a few more times for the year, USDA will release the weekly crop progress reports. We have updates from the statisticians in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and Minnesota today. Here's what the national numbers look like. As of Sunday, 65% of the corn crop around the nation had been harvested. That's behind the rolling five-year average of 73%. 83% of the soybeans have been harvested. The national average for the last 5 years is 83%.
This is Katie Andel, agricultural statistician for the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office. Iowa farmers harvested one quarter of the state's corn during 6.4 days suitable for field work this week. Iowa experienced extreme temperatures this week with a low of 14 degrees at Elkader and Stanley on Saturday and a high of 85 degrees at Sydney on Sunday the 26th. Iowa experienced one of the driest weeks in nearly 2 years, with only the north central part of the state receiving measurable rain. A hard freeze occurred statewide Saturday morning. Unchanged from last week at the state level, topsoil moisture levels rated 96% adequate to surplus, while subsoil moisture levels rated 94% adequate to surplus. 61% of Iowa's corn acreage was harvested, 4 days behind 2013 and 10 days behind the five-year average. Moisture content of corn at harvest was estimated at 18%. 76% of the corn crop was reported in good, excellent condition. Soybean harvest reached 91% complete, 3 days behind last year, but 1 day ahead of normal. This was the first time this season soybean harvest was ahead of average. Hay and refuge supplies were estimated at 97% adequate to surplus. Livestock conditions were normal, with more cattle turned out on corn stock fields. This is Katie Andel reporting from the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Illinois producers had another good week of harvest weather last week. Rainfall averaged only 0.35 inches last week, almost one-half inch below normal. Temperatures were also below normal. The state average was 46.2 degrees, more than 5 degrees below average. Corn harvest advanced 18 points and is now at 77% complete. That compares to 82% 1 year ago and the five-year average of 78%. Soybean harvest jumped by 20 points to 83% complete, compared to 91% 1 year ago and 84% normally. Sorghum harvest reached 75% complete, the same as the five-year average. Winter wheat planting also jumped last week. Illinois producers have now planted 69% of next year's wheat acres, compared to 94% 1 year ago and 83% for the five-year average. 36% of wheat acres have now emerged, compared to 62% normally. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Heartland Region.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Favorable weather conditions across Minnesota resulted in 6.1 days rated suitable for field work, and that allowed 30% of the state's corn crop to be harvested during the week. Moisture levels in late planted fields remained an issue for some producers during the harvest last week. Other field activities that occurred during the week were fall tillage, fertilizer application, and installation of tile and drainage projects. Some producers had concerns about soil moisture levels after completing fall tillage. Corn harvest at 71% complete improved from 10 days behind the five-year average last week to only 2 days behind average this week. This is the most corn harvested during the last week of October in Minnesota in more than 10 years. Moisture content of harvested corn was estimated at 18%. That's down 2 points from last week. Corn conditions decreased slightly to 66% good to excellent. Corn for silage harvest was wrapping up across the state. The soybean harvest remained ahead of normal for the third straight week. Harvest is 12 days ahead of the five-year average, with 98% of the crop harvested. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
This is Jessica Klatt with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service with the Indiana Crop and Weather Report. Sporadic precipitation throughout the state this week has slowed harvest completion and has kept farmers extremely busy during breaks in the weather. The statewide average temperature for the week was 46.5 degrees, which is 4.8 degrees below normal. Recorded precipitation ranged from 0.03 to 1.17 inches, with a statewide average of 0.57 inches. Corn was 58% harvested this week, compared to 72% last year and 70% five-year average. Soybeans harvested was 73% complete versus 87% last year and 84% five-year average. The late harvest rush is quickly filling up the elevators, leading to delays for several farmers. Some elevators were unable to take corn or soybeans. Winter wheat was 82% planted versus 90% last year and 85% five-year average. Winter wheat planted is nearly complete as corn and soybeans are moved off the fields. There is some concern that the delayed harvest may prevent some farmers from getting wheat planted before winter arrives. That concludes this week's Indiana Crop and Weather Report for the week ending November 2, 2014. This is Jessica Klatt reporting.
Our thanks, of course, go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of what's happened across the Midwest and the growing regions. Now let's turn our attention to the agricultural energy markets. Harry Cooney is on the phone line from GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois. Harry, thanks real much for taking the time. Let's start with the price of crude oil. It settled back a darn long ways.
That's right, Todd. Good afternoon on an election day here, kind of a gloomy, cloudy one here across the Bloomington area. Crude oil down $1.60 today, down to almost $77 a barrel. This is the lowest level that we've seen in crude oil since, probably all the way back to about 2011. And if we go under 75, it'll be the lowest prices we've seen since back in 2010. So obviously this thing has unraveled greatly from its peak for the 2014 calendar year, which was made back in about mid to late June when there was a lot of problems and a lot of tensions in the Middle East.
What's behind the move?
Well, there's several things. One of the biggest things is the Saudis don't seem like they're willing to support the price. Usually when the price would start breaking to the downside, the Saudis would come out and have a special OPEC meeting or something, and they would talk about cutting output. This year they're not doing that. They're allowing it to come on down for whatever reason. That's what they're doing. Now there's a big OPEC meeting. These OPEC meetings come and go throughout the year, but this one could be one of the more important ones that we've seen in several years now, given the fact that the output levels seem like they're continuing high, but prices are lower. Some of those OPEC countries may not like this, and the OPEC meeting is later in November on a real interesting day. They're going to have the OPEC meeting right on Thanksgiving Day here in the U.S. The markets actually trade a little bit on the electronic venue that day. It could be a real interesting trade following that OPEC meeting.
And then you couple this with a strong, very strong U.S. dollar, which means we can buy more oil, or more barrels or gallons of oil than usual. And it all means a lower price, I suppose, at least for the time being, just 30 seconds or so.
Yes, that's exactly right. As the U.S. dollar has rallied here, that's also allowed the energy prices to come off because there's an inverse relationship there. So the dollar continuing to march higher, it's made quite an advance just in the past several months. It's a big story in commodities in general, including oils.
Hey, Harry, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Harry Cooney, of course, is with GrowMark, joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Back in 2 minutes. With the weather.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
This is Illinois Public Media.
It's National Candy Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1841, Benjamin Goodrich was born. An American industrialist, he founded Goodrich II & Company in Akron, Ohio in 1870. A decade later, the company became known by its more familiar name, B.F. Goodrich. The company was known for a number of innovations, including adding carbon to the rubber to improve tire wear, and the invention of the first synthetic rubber tires in 1937. Also in 1841, the first wagon train arrived in California. In 1873, Anthony Iski was issued a patent for a meat slicing machine. It worked much like a mandolin, with a frame to hold the meat while sliding it against the blade. In 1879, James and John Ritty invented the first cash register. They came up with the idea to prevent bartenders from stealing at the Pony House restaurant in Dayton, Ohio. The first model looked like a clock, but instead of the hands indicating hours and minutes, they indicated dollars and cents. Also in 1879, inventor Thomas Elkins received a patent for a refrigerating machine which could be used to cool food. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Learned Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Learned Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgro on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason from U of I Extension. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Normally, we talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He's out of the office, but we do have this update of the weather forecast for the growing regions of the world from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated.
Most of the U.S. Midwest will be seeing a favorable mix of weather over this next week to 10 days. In fact, I think probably late season harvest progress will advance relatively well across the region during this period of time, even though we do have some weather disturbances that will advance through the region. Today is a good example. We do have a frontal boundary moving through the Midwest that is going to produce some shower activity across parts of the region. The majority of the precipitation over night last night was focused mostly on the western corn belt. It was somewhat disorganized. It looks like the majority of the precipitation was focused on the region from Wisconsin back into parts of Missouri and Kansas. There were also some other showers, though, that occurred in portions of northwest Iowa and South Dakota, as well as Minnesota. A lot of this precipitation, though, was less than, let's say, 0.2 inches. There were a few exceptions, but not in the heart of the Midwest. As we go through this next 24-hour period, we will see an increase in precipitation in the southwestern portions of the Corn Belt. This is mainly because of an insurgence of moisture that will be flowing into the region from a hurricane that is going to diminish as it moves into Mexico during the next couple of days. Tomorrow night, landfall will take place in west-central parts of Mexico, but the moisture from the storm is already streaming northeastward into parts of Texas, and so we will see an enhancement of precipitation occurring across some of the crop areas from Texas up into parts of the Midwest. Now, most of the precipitation of significance will occur no further to the northeast than southern parts of Illinois, and the focus of all the energy will be in Texas, parts of Arkansas, and maybe some areas in Louisiana, and the southernmost parts of the Delta eventually. The precipitation in all of these areas could end up running a couple of inches, and certainly locally greater amounts will take place, especially in Texas. There'll be a nice boost in soil moisture for future crop needs across Texas, but this isn't a very good time of the year for widespread rainfall, since there's quite a bit of cotton out there that's still left to be harvested. Another disturbance that will come across northern crop areas as move into the end of this week across the northern Midwest and may eventually impact some of the eastern Corn Belt country as well. Moisture totals with this event should be relatively light also, but we will see enough precipitation that we will see a little bit of a disruption to farming activity. Temperatures are expected to bounce around a bit as we go forward through these next few days. We do expect to see the majority of high temperatures running primarily in the 40s and 50s in the northwestern portions of the Corn Belt. We'll probably see 50 and maybe even some 60-degree temperatures periodically in southern areas, but that will occur fairly briefly. Looks like probably Wednesday, tomorrow, will likely be the warmer day in the lower parts of the region. As we move out into Thursday and Friday, a new surge of cool air will take place. We'll see highs running mostly in the 40s and 50s across a big part west.
Our thanks, of course, to Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City for his update of the weather forecast. Hey, don't forget to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can purchase your tickets to our Farm Assets Conference for the 24th day of November. Probably ought to do that right now. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Have a great afternoon.